From the Center for Investigative Reporting and PRX, this is Reveal. I'm Al Letson. We cover a lot of news here at Reveal. Some of it never makes it on air. So today, we're going to bring you three stories that we've been reporting at revealnews.org. And we're going to bring you up to date on these investigations through interviews with people at the heart of those stories. First is Richard Spencer. Now, you might remember him. He's a white nationalist dreaming of an ethnostate where only white people are allowed. He coined the phrase alt-right. Donald Trump's advisor, Steve Bannon, later used that term to describe the Breitbart news site that he ran for years. Last time I spoke to Spencer was the morning after Donald Trump's election, and he was thrilled. This is what he told me about America then.
White Americans, European Americans, in particular Anglo-Saxon Americans, Anglo-Saxon Protestants, were this essential historic people, that they defined it in a way that no other people did. So, of course, African Americans have influenced American culture and American identity. Of course, Asians have and so on. But it really was Anglo-Saxons who truly defined it, who made America what it is, who are indispensable.
During that interview, we asked, who's funding him and his small National Policy Institute? Spencer didn't give us a lot of answers, so we started looking into it ourselves. His nonprofit hasn't filed the required paperwork for the past 3 years. And the government pulled his nonprofit status this past week. The paperwork he did file does not give donor names. It also shows Spencer didn't draw a salary. So what does he do for money? We found that Spencer's family is well off, and a fair chunk of their wealth comes from something we never expected. Cotton farms in one of the poorest parts of Louisiana. Yeah, that's right. A white nationalist makes his money from cotton in the Deep South. His family owns more than 5,000 acres worth millions of dollars, and those farms have received more than $2 million in government subsidies. We wondered, are those cotton fields and government subsidies in any way keeping Spencer's white supremacist organization afloat? So we reached out to him again. All right, so the last time we spoke, it was right after President Trump won.
Yes.
And I'm curious how life has changed for you since that happened.
Well, life has changed pretty dramatically over the past year, I would say, and over the past 6 months.
For starters, on Inauguration Day, he got punched in the face by protesters, which was seen by the entire world on YouTube. Last month, he got kicked out of a major conservative conference called CPAC. Now, all of this after he had moved his office from Whitefish, Montana, to just outside Washington, D.C., to take advantage of what he believes is a new position of power since Donald Trump was elected. I asked him what it's like to be rejected by people he thought were his natural allies.
As long as I've been doing this, I've gotten used to the fact of my natural allies attacking me. I mean, I recognize that my life is going to be one of being a heretic. That is that, you know, we are touching on those things that disturb everyone.
So you moved from your office from Montana to D.C. Do people come to your offices like in the dead of night, covered up, trying to not be seen by their compatriots?
Well, maybe something like that is occurring. We have ways of maintaining privacy, to be sure. But basically, nothing's happened. I mean, they can't protest 24/7. On Sunday afternoons, there's some very polite protesters that will come out. That's perfectly fine. I don't have any problem with them.
How are you funding all of this? Because last time we talked, you said something along the lines of, like, you're sure that there are some millionaires, billionaires out there that believe in the same things that you do.
Yeah, it's the fact is we've always accepted donations. Those donations have certainly increased. There is going to be a major step forward in our movement where these kind of funds that are coming in are going to increase exponentially.
Our reporters began to look into where all the funding is coming from. And specifically, they found that your family, you have farmland that your grandfather got in the Jim Crow era of the South. They're cotton farms in Louisiana.
I'm not going to comment about my personal finances.
So do you own the farms, though? Because what we've been looking into is that, like, you own these farms in Louisiana. Your family does. You, your sister, and your mom own the farm. And you've gotten like millions of dollars from the government for subsidies. I'm just curious because you talk a lot about how America is a corrupt system and how everything is not working correctly, but you're benefiting off of that.
I am not involved in any direct day-to-day running of these businesses, and I've never criticized agricultural policy, to my knowledge. So, I mean, I'm sure there's so much about American society, government and private, that is not functioning. But I don't really see what you're saying.
Okay, so let me play you a clip from a speech you gave in November that I think will show you exactly what I mean. So this is you giving the closing speech at your National Policy Institute conference. A lot of people might remember this because this is the place where you held up the glass and said, "Hail Trump."
This is a sick, disgusting society run by the corrupt, defended by hysterics, drunk on self-hatred and degeneracy. We invade the world and fanatically invite entire populations who despise us. We subsidize people and institutions who make our lives worse just by the sheer fact of their existence. We run up deficits and pretend the laws of history simply don't apply to us because of American exceptionalism.
The reason why I played that clip is because you talk about we subsidize people and institutions who make our lives worse just by the sheer fact of their existence. Now, is that just reserved for people who don't look like you? Because I guess what I'm getting at here is that your family farm, owned by you, your mom, and your sister, it's like 5,000 acres of cotton land, and it brings in an impressive amount of money, but you're getting subsidies from the government.
Yes, you know, the agricultural industry is heavily subsidized by the government. It's been like that since the New Deal. I don't know what to say. At no point have I been accused of breaking laws.
I'm not accusing you of breaking any law whatsoever. What I'm asking, though, is the optics on a person who identifies himself as a white nationalist owning cotton plantations in the South, in a place where majority of the African-American households around there are extremely poor. The optics of that look really bad, one. So I'm asking about that. Two is that when you talk—
I'm proud of my grandfather. I'm proud of what he built. I have absolutely no—the optics for that are wonderful.
So you don't understand how it makes people like, say, me— uncomfortable when I hear and when I talk to people who are owning huge cotton plantations in the South, whereas like you're proud of your grandfather, but I know that my grandfather was on the other end of those transactions.
Right. Look, I can understand why you have a different perspective. That's what makes life beautiful, is the fact that there are varieties. People will see the same thing differently. Let's look at a different country, because sometimes we can be more objective about another world. Let's look at Germany and Angela Merkel. Since 1945, Germans have suffered from a kind of guilt complex. And Germans are very good at guilt. But they've had a very peculiar one, and that is this Hitler guilt, this Nazi guilt syndrome, where all of German history was leading up to Hitler. Angela Merkel, I think, probably quite genuinely wants to assuage this guilt. And she is doing that by being open to mass immigration. But what she's ultimately doing is destroying everything that's wonderful about Germany.
Richard, I'm more concerned with your thought process destroying this country than I am with her thought process destroying hers. I can tell you that I have the lived experience of what American history feels like. And I can tell you that having the lived experience in America, like the future is made for you to go and correct what has happened in the past so that everybody can move forward and we can be equitable. But in relationship to the work that you're doing right now, the movement that you're creating right now is being funded by the government, because on all the forms that we found about your organization, it doesn't have you listed as making a salary. And, you know, you got to eat. So if the money that you're using is coming from those farm subsidies, do you see what I'm saying?
I don't see what you're saying. Look, I live in this world. I mean, I'm not, I don't know what you want me to become, a monk or something, because I'm critical of America, therefore I have to become a monk.
I want you to do what feels comfortable for you. I'm just saying that there seems to be a disconnect when you talk about America as this corrupt, bad place, and then you're profiting off of it at the same time.
I mean, yeah, I live a decent life. I think lots of people live decent lives. That doesn't mean that I don't have radical criticisms of the direction that the country is. There's nothing to be gained by being Pollyanna and being like, oh, it'll all be okay because American exceptionalism. That's not a very manly perspective on the future. This is something that the left has always been very good at. They've always thought about the day after tomorrow, of communism, of utopia, or whatever. The right's always failed at this. I think the right needs to have these kinds of big dreams.
I'm curious, where do your beliefs come from? Where did these ideas begin to form? Did it start with your grandfather? Did it start with your father?
I think it started in the womb. I think that I do think about the world the same way that I think about it when I was five. But it wasn't a case. I think a lot of people want to say, oh, I bet his parents were racist and they instilled the... No, it's not like that at all, really. My parents are pretty, very mainstream, you know, Episcopalian Republicans in Dallas. They were not political radicals or heretics by any stretch of the imagination.
But they also very comfortably benefited off of the fruits of the Jim Crow South.
Not really. I mean...
Yeah. I mean, like, if your grandfather had such a big cotton plantation and was making a lot of money, your mother got that money. And, I mean, they benefited off of Jim Crow plantations. I'm not saying that, like, they benefited directly off of slavery, but the conditions that, and I do not know the specific conditions of your grandfather's farm, but I would say that the conditions that most people had to work in those days, most black people had to work in those days, were not good.
Look, I mean, my father's a physician. I mean, they have not benefited from these things. But look, we've all benefited from white privilege. I mean, I would never deny the existence, the reality of white privilege. That is a real thing. I think we should be proud of it. I want my children to have white privilege. I want more white people to have white privilege. Because a lot of white people don't have white privilege. I think this is someplace where... You would actually agree with me.
Well, I agree with that white privilege exists, yes. But white privilege...
You'd also agree that there are millions of white people who do not benefit from privilege of any kind.
I think that we all carry different types of privilege, right? I think that I have different privilege from black women. I think that as somebody that, you know, makes a decent salary, I have more privilege in a lot of financial ways. So I think that there's privilege all around to go around. But when you're talking about white privilege in America, like, it is such a huge thing that affects American society. And I think the work is to break down privilege and not to spread it out. I mean, you're basically saying that you want white people to be treated deferentially over everybody else.
I agree with what you were saying before. Basically, everyone comes from somewhere. Everyone has a perspective. Everyone has a privileged standpoint to some degree. I think privilege is good. I think a sense of ourselves, a sense of our of whites having a destiny, of having a purpose, of being able to do things that other people simply can't. I think that is a wonderful thing. That's what we want.
Are you able to run your organization because of your personal wealth that is built on cotton plantations and benefits from government subsidies? Is that how you're funding yourself? Because the amount of money that we're talking about with these farms isn't a small amount of money. This is millions of dollars.
I'm not going to talk about my personal finances. Like, look, I'm doing it. I mean, you can... You know, I need to have some privacy. I mean, you know, and there are certainly the organization could not run without generous donations.
I honestly don't believe that people are donating in mass to your organization.
I mean, look, it is what it is. They are donations have increased tenfold over the past 6 months.
Tenfold from what?
Tenfold from not a lot, no. As a heretic organization, I mean, we were operating on like 100 grand. Yeah, it's hard. But the fact is, it's like you have to start somewhere. And I've struggled. But I knew that this was all going to be a big struggle. And I like struggle at some point, because when what I can accomplish When you accomplish something and you're struggling, when you accomplish something and people aren't just giving you something, it feels all the better. I mean, it really feels joyous.
Richard, this is exactly what I'm talking about, though. You just said when you accomplish something and people aren't giving you anything, it feels great. But farm subsidies is the government giving you something. That's what I'm talking about. The disconnect from like how you make your personal wealth to the work that you're talking about right now, it's right there.
Well, first off, I have never been at least not in the past 10 years or so. I'm not a libertarian, okay? I don't think, you know, government action is inherently wicked or something. So I'm not a hypocrite in this sense. And I don't know what to say to you. I mean, I've said it over and over. Like, I navigate the world in which I live.
That was white nationalist Richard Spencer. He feels the Trump election is an endorsement of his worldview. Thanks to Emily Harris for producing this interview. If you want to learn more about where Spencer gets his money, go to revealnews.org. Reporter Lance Williams dug into Spencer's cotton farms and his family's connection to the Jim Crow South. While you're at our website, you might notice the story we first broke there about photos of female service women being spread around the internet. When we come back, we'll talk to the Marine-turned-journalist who uncovered that story. He says Marines are now threatening him and his family.
My wife has gotten email alerts that people are, like, ordering my life reports on her and stuff like that. It feels like I signed my wife and daughter up to becoming a victim. I don't know of what yet, but it feels like I've stirred the hornet's nest enough to where they're going to be the target from now on.
That's next on Reveal from the Center for Investigative Reporting and PRX.